An arraignment is in 2 hours in New York City. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News. 2 days after Venezuelan leader Nicolas Maduro was captured along with his wife in a U.S. military raid, FBI Director Kash Patel tells Fox,
every component of this operation, every link in this chain was flawlessly executed by the experts in the intelligence community and law enforcement and military sectors, and we were proud to be a part of it.
Maduro and Celia Flores are facing narco-terrorism and drug and weapons charges flown by helicopter this morning from their jail cells in Brooklyn to a federal courthouse in Manhattan, where Fox's Eric Shawn reports.
The indictment says, quote, this cycle of narcotics-based corruption lines the pockets of Venezuelan officials and their families, while also benefiting violent narco-terrorists who operate with impunity on Venezuelan soil and who help produce, protect, and transport tons of cocaine to the United States.
Later today, the Secretaries of State and War and others will brief congressional leaders about the raid that captured Maduro. Some Democrats have called it illegal. Not Senator John Fetterman. He tells Fox,
this wasn't a war. This wasn't boots on grounds and in that kind of a way. This was surgical and very efficient. And they want to celebrate our military.
President Trump says the U.S. is in charge of Venezuela now. And if the acting president, Delcy Rodriguez, does not do what's right, she could pay a very big price, probably bigger than Maduro. Congress will also hold its first hearing this week into multi-billion-dollar fraud allegations in Minnesota, where news just broke a short time ago. Democratic Governor Tim Walz will not run for re-election.
Amid a billion-dollar fraud scandal that's rocked Minnesota and ongoing state and federal probes into stolen tax dollars that mostly targets the state's Somali community. The Walz campaign releasing his statement ahead of his news conference, saying in part that Republicans are playing politics with the future of the state.
Fox's Jeff Manasso. The Secret Service made an arrest after midnight in Cincinnati, Ohio. A man accused of breaking windows, vandalizing Vice President Vance's residence. America's listening to Fox News.
Progressive presents Employee of the Month. Small Business Edition. Today's recipient from Lucky Larry's Landscaping, Larry! Larry saved his business money with a quick commercial auto quote from Progressive. Does it help he's his own marketing manager, accountant, executive assistant, and never been late? Technically, yes, but saving really put him over the edge. So, Larry, give Larry a round of applause. Be your own, Larry. See if you could save in as little as 8 minutes at ProgressiveCommercial.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates.
Welcome to the most wonderful time of the year, when millions of Americans open their credit card statements, scream in terror, and start looking for new ways to save money. If that's you, why not cut your wireless bill in half with a saver plan from Pure Talk? You'll get unlimited talk, text, and 3 gigs of high-speed data on a super-fast 5G network for just $20 a month. Ho, ho, ho. Just dial #250, say micro, and Pure Talk's U.S. customer service team will help you switch in minutes. Again, talk, text, and data for just $20.
From the News 11 Information Desk, I'm Madeline Murray. The winter lettuce capital of the world expanded its horizons to a multitude of vegetables to locals and visitors during the Yuma County Cooperative Extension's U-Pick event Saturday. The event took place at Yuma Ag Center at 9 a.m. There was a variety of items during the event like cauliflower, lettuces, beets, Napa cabbage, and radishes. And we are in the heart of the flu season, and cases are on the rise after the holiday season. The flu season generally starts in October, but cases spread quicker from November through January. Symptoms can linger for weeks after getting the infection. In order to help yourself and those around you, there are proper precautions you can take to stop the spread of it. Flu season generally lasts through May, so make sure you continue to take precautions throughout the winter and into the warmer months. Catch us on the TV side on News 11 every weekday at 5, 6, and 10 p.m. for your latest local news, weather, and sports.
Partly cloudy skies with 72, the high for today. Partly cloudy, 52 tonight. 71 and partly cloudy on Tuesday. 51, partly cloudy on Tuesday night. Partly cloudy, 68, the high on Wednesday.
The Desert Lily Annual Quilt Show is coming Friday and Saturday, January 9th and 10th at the Yuma Civic Center with hundreds of beautiful quilts and wearable art items on display. See the special quilt celebrating America's 250th birthday. There'll be items for sale at the country stores and a fat quarter basket drawing. Admission is just $8. Buy tickets for your chance at winning the Love in a Mist quilt. Proceeds to benefit the Hanson House. The Desert Lily Annual Quilt Show, January 9th and 10th at the Yuma Civic Center. Don't miss it.
My name is Emma. I am 13 years old. 6 years ago, I was injured in a car accident that left me paralyzed from the waist down. Once I completed rehab, my mom applied for a canine companion service dog. Last January, I finally got to meet my service dog, Marcia. We quickly developed a very strong bond. Together, we go to my horseback riding lessons, school band practice, swim meets, and archery classes. Together, we pick vegetables, and we like to cut flowers. I love Marcia. She makes me feel like together we can do anything. I can't imagine life without her. She's a part of the family. We are just one of the thousands of teams Canine Companions has paired together over the past 50 years. With your help, we can continue for another 50. Visit canine.org to see the many ways you can change lives.
The following program on 560 KBLU is a paid program. All opinions expressed by the program participants are solely their current opinions and do not reflect the opinions of 560 KBLU, Eldorado Broadcasters, LLC, their respective parent companies or affiliates, or the companies with which the program participants are affiliated and may have been previously disseminated by them. The program participants' opinions are based upon information they consider reliable, but neither 560 KBLU, Eldorado Broadcasters, nor its affiliates, nor the companies with which such participants are affiliated, warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such.
Welcome to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hanson, hosted by attorneys Sean Garner and Adam Hanson.
I want to introduce our guest to the show. We have Judith Lopez on the show here. Judith is a small business owner. She is here in Yuma, Arizona. And Judith, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Good morning. I'm Judith, and I'm a business owner. I have two breakfast places, diners, Staples of Yuma, Bubba's, and Daybreakers. And I've been...
Yeah, that is... It's amazing because I'm sitting here, and for someone that owns two restaurants, I would think that they would be a lot older and perhaps received it through the family chain, some type of inheritance, but that's not your story, is it? Do you mind saying how old you are?
Yes, I'm 35.
Okay.
I started at Bubba's when I was 29, 30 years old. I used to work there when I was like 19.
Okay.
I went into the beauty industry. I kept in contact with the previous owner. He was ready to sell during the pandemic, and I had a few money saved, and I decided to
buy. How did you save money?
I work a lot.
Okay.
Yes.
So you didn't inherit this large sum of money. You just worked a lot, and you spent less than, or you spent less than you made. So, I mean, that's the magic formula.
Yes, it is.
Okay. You worked there, when you started working there as a server at 19, was it a server or was it a hostess?
Hostess position.
You never were a server?
Never.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you worked there as in the hostess position. So when people came in, you greeted them and helped them find their seats. Mm-hmm. And then you wrapped utensils in napkins. Right? That's what hostesses do, right? They wrap the silverware in the napkins and they greet people and make sure they get their seats right. What else do you do there?
And then slowly I started taking orders, and then eventually I became a server.
Okay.
Yes.
And so you started working there at 19. Did you do any jobs before 19?
Yes. When I was younger, when I was, I think, like 14, my dad, he lived in Bakersfield and they did agriculture. So during summertime, I used to go over there, work for like a few weeks for my clothes for the new year.
School. What would you do? What type of jobs?
Picking grapes.
Really?
Yes.
How is picking grapes? Is it a fun job?
Packing it, yes. Picking it and carrying it, no, that wasn't fun.
So describe the grape picking process to me. I've seen it in movies. It looks pretty glamorous.
Yes.
Because there's all these beautiful vineyards and you're walking through, and it just seems kind of like a dream. But I assume if you're doing it for however many hours a day, it's not so much a dream. Tell me what it's like. Walk me through a day as a grape.
Well, to be honest, I can't even remember. Can remember like the smell of the acids, or I don't know what they put, but
pesticides or something.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And but it was fun. I mean, I was young. I had a bunch of like cousins, so we always tried to like make the day go by fast.
You could work side by side and chat as you worked.
Yes.
Okay.
People were singing. They had music, so it was fun.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a good experience.
And so I imagine you've got like some type of basket, and is it around your shoulder and you're
No, so it's a basket. You cut it, you put it on the basket, you lay it, you cut the pieces that aren't good, and then you carry it on what do you call it?
Like a wheelbarrow like some sort of trolley?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the sand, it's loose, so to carry that, maybe like half a mile, like it's tough.
Oh, okay.
Yes. So that was the part that I didn't used to like.
You just yank the the grapes off, or do you cut them?
Cut them.
Mm-hmm. So you got a little knife and you're just cutting them as they go. You ever cut yourself as you do it?
No. Mm.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. So you did that just to earn money to buy school clothes.
Mm-hmm.
And when you bought school clothes, did you buy like the name brands? Did you buy?
No,
like,
I used to go to Target.
Fashion? Okay. So you were pretty conscientious with your money even back then as a 14-year-old.
Yes.
Well, what do you think ingrained that sense of just being able to budget into you? Was that just because you worked for the money and so you appreciated it? Or is it something you were born with?
I think a little bit of both. I was always like appreciated person with everything I had. Even with food, like everything.
Uh-huh.
So, and then also conscious, like it wasn't easy to make that money.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, to go just spend it anywhere.
So did your friends see you as somebody that had money because, you know, you had the opportunity to go and work? A lot of 14-year-olds don't have that connection where they can go out and make a good amount of money during the summertime. And, so they're either broke or they're, you know, using their parents' money all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So were you the person that they would go to and say, hey, well, Judith's got money. Let's go, you know.
Not really, because I've always been a quiet person and I try not to like be like, oh, I have money or be that type of person.
Do you remember when you opened up your first savings account or checking account?
Yes, and I wasn't that smart.
Okay.
Yeah, it was when I was 18.
Uh-huh.
So, of course, I had my joint account with my mom. And then as soon as I turned 18, they offered me a credit card. So I accepted the credit card. There was two of them. With one of them, I was good. The second one, I wasn't good. At the time, I think I stopped working. So I didn't have any money to make my payments. And I was so prideful that I was going to ask my mom for money to pay my credit cards. So, it went into collection.
Really? Oh, so you actually had to go through the process and learn the hard way. Yes. When you spend too much, it eventually you have to pay the piper.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So when it went into collection, what'd you do?
So I just let it. I mean, I wasn't knowledgeable about the credit, how it worked or anything, because I didn't have anybody like my mom or my dad or any family member who knew what credit meant.
Did you ask them?
No, never.
Okay.
It was just a topic that...
So even if they did know, you wouldn't have been...
Yes.
You know, brave enough to go, hey, mom, I got...
I'm in this...
Sent to collections. Yeah. Uh-huh. So you worked it out with a collection agency. You paid it off. And then that was a lesson learned. And from that point on, you were a little more frugal with your credit cards.
Yes.
Okay. So this is a lesson you learned at 18, or did it take until 19 or 20?
I think more like into like 20.
So tell me some other jobs that you've done. I know that your mom, she owns a barbershop. Is she a beautician?
No. And she's just a barber.
She's just a barber. Okay. But you went to beauty school, right? Yes. You're a beautician.
Yes. I went into beauty school and I used to do women.
So tell me that process. What time did you start and how did you decide to go to beauty school?
Okay, so I decided that was like kind of like a passion that I used to have, but I mean, money-wise. And so at the time, I got a job offer in Alaska. So I went to Alaska for like maybe 2 months. I did a little bit of savings, came back, down payment for my school.
Wait, hold on. You went to Alaska to do what? Because whenever I hear Alaska, I'm thinking hunting, fishing, something like that. So you went to Alaska and did...
It was packing.
Okay.
Caviar.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it was something to do with fishing industry. Yes. Okay, mm-hmm. So you're packing caviar, and so you're working in ice all day?
No, it was just like, it was... it wasn't cold there. It was just like a random spot.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Like it wasn't freezing. It wasn't like a cooler. What do you call it? Like,
yeah. No. It wasn't a freezer where you had to have ice to keep the caviar fresh or mm-hmm. anything like that.
I mean, it was fresh, but it wasn't freezing.
It wasn't. No. Okay. Packed in a bunch of mm-hmm. crushed ice. Okay. So you got a job offer to go to Alaska. How old were you?
At the time, I think I was like 20. I was older. I think 23.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
And so you went and had this connection to go up to Alaska and earn money. How was it? Was it worth the money? Was what you were promised, did it actually come out?
Yes, because I was rent-free. They gave me money to spend. I can't remember the word where they give you.
Yeah, like per diem?
Per diem.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So I had that. So all my check was clear, clean, just for me.
And how many hours a day did you work?
I think that season wasn't the best as previous, but it was a good 8 hours, 10 hours.
Okay. So you weren't like killing it like 12, 14 hours a day. Because I've heard of people mm-hmm. that go and just like.
Everything they do, it's work. Yes. Yeah. No, it wasn't my case.
So what did you do in your time off there in Alaska?
Just walk around, enjoy the weather.
Really? And it was nice weather.
Yes. Nice weather. It was during the summer.
Okay. So come back from Alaska, then. You mm-hmm. didn't work for a little while, you say, when you were about 18 or 19? When you were 19 years old, you didn't work?
Yes, I used to work with, when I was in high school, I was like 17. I was, it was my senior year.
Mm-hmm.
I used to go to like 2-3 classes, and then after that, I used to work at a clothing store for a while.
After school?
Yes, after school.
Is there a time in your life where you didn't have a job, a long period of time where you just... did school and hung out with friends?
There were times, but mainly I was always doing something.
You're used to having a job.
Yes.
Because that's what you do. You're an entrepreneur or you like to make your own money. And so that's what you do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So tell me how you transitioned into becoming an owner. Because that's a different mentality. Working is one mentality. Making your own money and being self-sufficient. That's tough to do. And I think a lot of people today struggle with that. They need some guidance. And I think all of us have been in credit card debt at one point mm-hmm. or another. I know I certainly have. So you had that mentality growing up from the time you were 14, going over to the orchards or the vineyards in mm-hmm. Bakersfield. But what made you think, you know what? I don't necessarily have to work for this individual. I could have individuals work for me. Was there something that you had a mentor that helped you understand that was feasible? Or was that just something that you understood and set as a goal to achieve?
I think it was something that I saw in my mom. Like I mentioned, she was a barber. So she was always making a little bit more than minimum wage.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember at the time she only used to survive or like the payments and everything, just what she made on tips. Everything else was kind of like clear for her, for her savings.
Uh-huh.
So I think like growing up, I saw that. And then I saw the other side of just working as a minimum wage.
So she's still a barber, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she's got a barber shop here in town.
Mm-hmm.
How many? One?
Just one.
And what's the name of it?
It's Fortuna Hills.
Okay, so for Fortuna Hills, so we're going to put in a plug for Fortuna Hills. If you need a haircut, do they specialize in anything specific?
No.
Is there a theme or something that attracts a certain type of clientele? Or is it, if you just want a good haircut, you go to Fortuna Hills Barbershop?
Yes, I think they just always try to provide a good customer service, a good experience.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of Marines that... go to the barber. Do they service a lot of Marines there, or is it just...
Yes, Marines, locals, seniors, winter visitors.
Everybody.
Everybody.
Okay. So now, when I think barbershop, I think men. Is that accurate or am I off?
That's correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So what got her into becoming a barber and cutting men's hair as opposed to a beautician and cutting women's hair?
Well,
or do beauticians cut women's hair, or is it?
Yes. And I think beauticians, they do a little bit of both depending on what they want to like, what path they want to follow.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So they can cut hair and then they can do maybe makeup as well.
Makeup,
eyebrows,
highlights, everything.
Mm-hmm. Highlights. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, she decided to go in and get her barber's license. And I understand it's a bit of a process. It's not as easy as some people might think.
No, well, she went to school in Mexico, in San Luis, Mexico.
Okay.
She got both the barber schooling and the cosmetology student.
Okay. So she did go both.
Yes,
okay, both. And so can she cut women's hair as well?
She knows how, mm-hmm. but it wasn't like her thing.
Okay.
So then once she came to the States, at the time it was easier. So she just went straight to state board. Did her testing and she passed and she got her license.
Okay. So Foothills Barbershop, right? That's all I need to look up to be able to find her place. Okay. And so she got her license in San Luis and I don't know how this works. Does the license transfer over? Is it universal or does she have to get recertified or licensed here in the United States?
Well, everything changes through years. At the time, it was like, I don't know, let's say like over 20 years when she got her license.
Okay.
So it was transferable.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So she came up, she was able to just open up shop. Did she work for somebody else when she started?
Coming up, more thought-provoking conversations on life, death, and the law right after this.
Sprague Sports is Yuma's hunting and shooting headquarters. Why? Because Sprague Sports is the difference. Where else can you buy, sell, trade, or consign firearms with free expert appraisals always? There's nothing like Sprague Sports with local price matching. You can buy with confidence at Sprague's. And all Sprague's firearms come with a lifetime warranty. And talk about customer service. There's a gunsmith always on duty. And there's expert one-day sight-in service. But that's not all. Sprague Sports has got training classes, including Arizona CCW, First Shot, Hunter's Education, and more. Sprague's handles Glock, Blue Label pistols, and is your NFA dealer in suppressors and full autos. That's why we call them the experts. And Sprague's is Yuma's Yeti headquarters, the best Yeti selection and free ice for life. Sprague's has 15 lanes of certified indoor shooting range and gun rentals you can try before you buy. That's Sprague Sports, Yuma's hunting and shooting headquarters. Responsible gun ownership since 1956. 32nd Street, next to Lowe's.
The new year means new resolutions, not just for your body, but for your finances as well. Did you know that financial health is directly related to your identity protection? This is why you need LifeLock. LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points per second. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock's restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed, or your subscription money back. Resolve to make your identity, health, and wealth part of your New Year's goals with LifeLock. Visit LifeLock.com and save up to 40% off your first year with a promo code BECK. Terms apply.
The impact of a meal goes well beyond feeding our bodies. Because when people don't have to worry about where their next meal is coming from, they can truly thrive. Like Marta.
And now we'll hear from our class valedictorian, who with her hard work never ceases to amaze us. Please welcome Marta Moreno.
And Alex.
Hey, Alex. How did the interview go?
I did it! I got the job! I can't believe it!
I knew it. Let's meet up later to celebrate.
And Diego.
Mom! I got first place at the science fair with my volcano project!
That's amazing, sweetie. Congratulations!
Because when people are fed, futures are nourished, and everyone deserves to live a full life. Join the movement to end hunger at feedingamerica.org/act now. feedingamerica.org/act now. A public service announcement brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
Yes.
Okay. And so she worked in the shop. She had her station. Do you have to pay, like, rent or something for the station that you work
commission.
At? Commission. Okay. You, so They want to keep your station busy because they want commission, and clients that are satisfied with, or customers with your work, they're going to come back to your station more often. And then the whoever's owning the shop is satisfied with you because your chair is full and you're making more money and they're making more money. Is that, do I have it down right?
Correct.
Okay. What am I missing?
Nothing.
That's how it works. Okay. And so she pays a commission off of both the price of the haircut. Does she also pay a percentage of the tips that she makes?
No.
Okay. So tips are all hers. Awesome. So if the haircut is $15, $20, mm-hmm. she'll pay a commission of what? 10, 20%?
Can't remember. I think it's like 30, 70. And then...
So she gets to keep 70%. She pays a commission of 30%. So that's kind of like a her rent for having that. Is it one seat or is it just her wherever they choose to sit?
Whatever they choose to sit.
Okay, so she doesn't have a specific assigned station that she goes to.
Well, it depends on every salon or barbershop.
Mm-hmm.
I think nowadays it's more you rent your station.
Okay.
And then it's kind of like you're self-employed.
Yeah.
That's what I used to do when I went into beauty industry. I used to rent my... Well, I started as a commission and then... Once I build up my clientele, I transition into renting my spot.
So when you're negotiating with the owner, do they say, you have two options. You can either rent, and it's going to be this certain amount, whether you have the customers or not,
mm-hmm.
or you can pay a commission, which means you're only going to have a percentage taken out of your check each time. And if you think, hey, I can really kill it, I'm going to do more and just paying the rent and keeping the rest, mm-hmm. then you go for that. Is it an option that they offer you, or is it something you have to promote to?
It's an option.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're commission, you get the walk-ins. If you rent your station, you have to bring your own customers or clients.
Oh, okay.
That's the difference.
Yeah, because they want the commission, and so they're feeding the walk-ins to the people that are paying the commission.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so when you started working there, did you start with commission?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And how long did you do commission for?
I think it was like a year. Then I had a really strong clientele. And that's when I decided to become, to rent my station.
How does it make you feel when somebody comes in and they're like, yes, I'd like to have Judith?
Yes. At first I was scared because I was like, no, like I didn't knew like which clients were winter visitors or mm-hmm. which ones were local. So I was kind of like a little bit of scared to make that transition. And at the end, I was like, you know what? I think I'm ready because I started like seeing the books of like how solid I was booked year round.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, I'm ready. So it took me a year.
So it really takes a conscientious effort of looking at the funds and your scheduling and saying, okay, this mathematically could work.
Mm-hmm.
I could actually do it the other way around mm-hmm. and make more money. Because if you just go in as with an employee mentality of I'm going to be here from 8 to 5
mm-hmm.
and whatever I make, then you're probably not going to make the connection of how you can excel and get a little bit better until you can feel confident enough to rent out your space.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like that is a really good stepping stone. I don't know why it's now making that connection for me that so many people that go through either the barber or the beautician type, I want to say career path, that they are the entrepreneur type.
Yes.
They are looking for something where they can use their skills and leverage it to become either an owner or something that it's not just exchange my time for money, but they can actually create a business where the business itself starts to generate revenue by hiring out other employees or being able to raise their prices a little bit based on their own value that they provide for the customer.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like a natural transition for barbers and beauticians both to understand that concept because what they provide results in a direct transition of the consumer coming back and saying, yes, that's what I want.
Yes.
So did you have a specific type of clientele that were your regular customers?
Yeah, so I used to work in the foothills.
Mm-hmm.
I used to have a lot of retired clientele. So I think the key is to provide good customer care and then also take care of
What does it mean, good customer care?
Well, if you schedule an appointment, be there on time.
Okay.
Be present during the service, because I know like a lot of people, they just put the dye on the hair and mm-hmm. they leave.
Mm.
Processing time could be anywhere from 30 minutes to 50 minutes and they'll leave them. And me, I always try to be there with the customer, with the client, and provide my time, my attention.
Uh-huh.
And at the end, it was just like clicking and making more of a friendship, a connection with them.
Yeah.
That's just another number for me.
Right. So it's not just a good outcome. Of course, that's a given. You need to have a good outcome. But the human connection, the human aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
Was there a certain age group? You primarily worked with women, right?
Yes.
Okay. So you worked dyeing hair and cutting hair. Anything else that was like kind of your niche that you assisted your customers with?
Like yes.
Eyebrows or
eyelashes.
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 Okay.
So my hair clientele was older women.
Mm-hmm.
And then my younger crowd was younger.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And when you say younger, how young?
Anywhere from 20 to 30.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So they're focusing on eyelashes and highlights and a trim and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
What was your favorite type of client to come in? What was the easiest conversation for you to have that made the time go by quickest?
I think both. From the older people, I always used to ask questions. A lot of them were American people.
Mm-hmm.
And
now, when you say American people, tell me, what do you mean by that?
White people.
White people. Uh-huh. Okay.
Yes. So they have, of course, we are different culture. I'm Mexican.
Mm-hmm.
And just like I used to ask questions like, oh, where did you used to work? Where did you used to invest? And things that in my culture, we don't think about. We don't think about our future.
Okay.
So I remember, or it was an observation that I did made was I had the customer or the client that used to come and say, add me some highlights, cut my bangs, blow dry it, blah, 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 with no asking how much extra.
Mm.
And then I had the other clients that used to be like, oh, how much extra if you cut my bangs?
Mm-hmm.
Or how much extra if you style it? So I was like observing the difference in between those two type of clients. So that's when I started asking questions of where did you used to work? Did you invest it? Did you had a retirement plan?
So was it typically the richer clients that didn't care about the price and it was just say, do A, B, and C? Or was it the people that were a little bit more frugal, but they had money that would ask about the price?
It was more like the rich people that, yes.
They would ask about the price.
No, they wouldn't.
Mm. They wouldn't. Okay, so if they're wealthier, and they wouldn't ask about the price.
No.
Because they knew they could afford it. But if they were on a budget, then they would ask about the price.
Right.
Well, that makes sense.
Yes.
Okay. Because I've seen the opposite. Mm-hmm. I've seen when somebody has over about $2 million when I'm doing an estate plan, they will typically say, okay, now how much is this going to cost me, like right up front? They're very specific about whether or not anything that I'm going to be doing is going to cost an extra amount. And they have probably a longer decision-making process for me to help them understand the value of the services that I'm providing. When somebody comes in and has, let's say if they come in to me and they have anywhere between 400,000 and a million, it doesn't seem like the price is as big of a deal. Maybe they've done the research before even walking in. I don't know. But it seems to me that the wealthier they are, the more stingy they might be with their money. And it's ironic because the wealthier that they are, the more they need my services and the less it's really going to hurt their pocketbook. But that's how they got wealthy, perhaps, is yes. being stingy about it.
Yes, because they're thinking of, okay, I'm going to be spending this extra money with this person where I can use that money to invest it somewhere else.
Yeah, but you saw the opposite. The wealthier people were like, just go ahead and do whatever you think is necessary. Mm-hmm. And other people that might not have as much money to spend or spare cash, they're just... they wanted to know specifically how much it would be to see how much they could afford and then get right. that done.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So when you worked with some of these, let's say, clients that were older, what were some of the stories that you learned or some of the things that you found fascinating? Were there some veterans that had served in the military, or was it investment experience or job experience that was interesting?
I think most of them, or the people that had that little extra money to spend, mm-hmm. it was 401k or those type of investments.
Uh-huh. Okay. Mm-hmm. And were they snowbirds or were you usually Yuma residents?
Snowbirds.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Coming down from, so did you ask where you're from and what's it like up there?
A lot of them were from Washington, a few Canadians, mainly, I think it was people from Washington.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So you went from a stint working as a hostess and then a server at Bubba's.
Mm-hmm.
And then you worked as a beautician for a while. And then you went back. So tell me that transition of going back and working and looking at. Did you go back with the eye of actually becoming an owner? Or did you just go back and get a job again at Bubba's?
Coming up, more thought-provoking conversations on life, death, and the law right after this.
All right, do-it-yourselfer. You've got the idea, and you got your building supplies at Southwest Lumber.
That's right.
Now, all you need is a bunch of expensive tools to get the job done.
Oh, that's right.
And you know just the place to rent them. Southwest Lumber, your home for everything home improvement. Southwest Lumber has half-day to multiple-day rentals available on just about anything you need to finish the job. Rent equipment and tools on Saturday and Sunday. It's free. Stop in today at 1917 South Avenue B in Yuma. Southwest Lumber, ready for everything.
Hi, this is John Patch, national host of Talking Pets with your Pet Minute. As a pack animal, your dog is prepared to live in a structured society in which each member holds a certain position. If human members of the dog's family do not demonstrate leadership, the dog will take over the role. Such a dog may become aggressive if he feels his position is being challenged. Do not step over the dog lying in the doorway. Basically, as a parent, you want to control the space. Tell him to get up and out of your way. Do not let the dog dash out of the door ahead of you. Command him to sit, stay while you walk through first. Then call him to follow. Works well for cats as well. Check out more pet information at TalkinPets.com and on social media at Talkin' Pets Radio.
The Radio Channels. The Radio Channels. CRN.
Hi, friends. This is John Patch. As host of Talkin' Pets, I get asked all the time if I know of a pet odor eliminator product that actually does work. The answer to that is yes. It's called SCOE 10X. And that's SCOE10X. The best odor eliminator product made. And you know why? Because SCOE 10X actually eliminates bad pet odor like urine, feces, vomit, even skunk odor is eliminated. And it's a 100% money-back guarantee. SCOE 10X doesn't mask or cover odor with heavy fragrances. SCOE 10X is fragrance-free. SCOE 10X is completely non-toxic and hypoallergenic. It is so safe you can use it directly on your pet, your own skin, or plants. Read hundreds and hundreds of actual customer success stories at SCOE10X.com. And since SCOE 10X can only be purchased at SCOE10X.com, once you're done reading all those great reviews, get your own bottle of SCOE 10X today. Take it from me, John Patch. Use SCOE 10X, a pet odor eliminator product that actually works.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
I went back as an owner.
Really? Okay. So how did that, can you walk me through that process?
Okay. So it was during the pandemic. I was working at the salon. I kept in contact with the previous owner of Bubba's.
Mm-hmm.
And he was ready to sell. He was a little bit sick. So I had money saved. I made him an offer. And that's how it all started.
How did you save money? Did you just, you live at home and so that helped save?
No, I used to own my own condo. So I had my payments.
Really?
I had my car payment.
You went out and bought your own home and we were still able to save money.
Yes.
Okay.
But then also I was a little bit of a workaholic.
Okay.
So I used to do hair from 7, 8 till 5. And then after 5, I did eyelashes. And I used to leave work 10. So
wow.
I was working a lot.
Okay. And that's typically what I hear of people that become business owners, is they don't transition from going 8 to 5 and then owning a business and still working 8 to 5. They work a lot.
Mm-hmm.
The average millionaire works 60 hours a week. So would you say you fit that stereotype?
Sure.
Okay. Do you still work that much?
Yes, but now my work, it's different. It's more mental. It's more delegating, coordination. It's different, but I still work a lot. I work every day, even on vacations.
What gave you the confidence that you could go in and buy a restaurant? I mean, working there as a server or a hostess is one thing.
It was scary, but...
But owning a business, was it the seeing the business aspect of the beauty salon and seeing, okay, if I do this, if I provide this customer service, if I rent my space as opposed to doing commissions, I can make more money. And then that business savvy translated into... any business, including a restaurant, even though they're totally two different services.
Yes. So, I mean, I think at the time I didn't knew much about business.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was good, because if I knew a lot about of business wise, maybe you're too scared to make the move.
Yeah.
So yes, I had a lot to lose. But then I also had a lot to win, and I had a vision. I had that money saved, and I just went for it.
Are you more conscientious and, I guess, hesitant to jump into a deal like you did with Bubba's now, or are you more confident now? Because sometimes being naive, That's what you need to take the risk that is necessary to become a business owner. But then once you start to acquire something, it's harder because now you've got a lot to lose.
Yes.
And so I guess the question is, are you more likely to acquire more businesses now, or are you a little bit more conservative and you want to hang on to the wealth that you have obtained?
I think it gets me confident. I mean, I try to review numbers, and numbers don't lie.
Mm-hmm.
But I've done a few other transactions. I bought another restaurant. It wasn't that great for me, so I sold it and bought another one.
So what other restaurant did you buy?
I bought A&R Grill.
Okay.
On 4th Avenue.
Uh-huh.
So I bought it like 2 years ago. I had it for a year. Numbers were good, but not what I was looking for. So I just sold it, bought Daybreakers 6 months ago.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
So Daybreakers, is that something you had your eye on, or did somebody come to you and say, wait, we know that you are an entrepreneur, you do the restaurant business. Did they come to you, or how did that transaction happen?
It was
happen?
A funny story. So that was like maybe like 4 or 5 years ago, I was shopping at Smart and Final,
mm-hmm.
and I met this guy at the parking lot, And it was the owner of Daybreakers at the time. And we started talking. And every time I went there, I saw him. We used to chat a little bit. And then he offered it to me. Then we started negotiating.
So you met him in Smart and Finals. He didn't know you before that?
No.
How did you strike up a conversation?
It was something about my car. He was complimenting my car.
Uh-huh.
And then we started talking, and then he was like, oh, do you own a business? And I was like, yes, Bubba's. And I was like, what about you? And then he was like, oh, Daybreakers. So we kind
of... Did he have a nice car?
Yes, he did.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
You want to say what it was?
He was complimenting my car.
Yeah, but did he have a nice car too?
Oh, yes. He was driving a Denali, a truck.
Oh, okay. And you were driving what?
The Yukon Denali.
Oh, okay. So he had a Chuck Denali, you had a Yukon Denali. Okay, all right. So it started out as a car kind of thing.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And then we started negotiating. At the time, it wasn't a good deal for me. And so I backed out. A few years later, I saw him again. We started talking about numbers. And then, unfortunately, he passed away.
Where did you see him?
At Smart and Final again.
No way.
Yes.
So why do you guys run into each other at Smart and Final? What is it about Smart and Final that brings business owners
there? A lot
of
restaurant owners, we do a lot of like local shopping, and that's the spot to
go. That's the spot to go. Okay. I didn't know that.
Yes.
Okay. So if you're an entrepreneur looking to get into the restaurant business,
mm-hmm.
hang out at Smart and Final.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then, well, he passed away. And then it was this February, I knew that they were trying to sell again. So I got in contact with the wife
mm-hmm.
and made a deal. And here I am.
Wow. Now, so there's two Daybreakers. There's Daybreakers 1 and then Daybreakers 2.
Yes, Daybreakers 2, it's in town.
Uh-huh.
And it's been closed now for like almost 2 years, I want to say.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So did you acquire that as well?
No, just the one in the foothills.
Okay. And are you looking to acquire the Daybreakers 2 and maybe revive it?
Not at the moment.
Why is that? Numbers don't work?
No.
Okay. Interesting.
Yes.
Well, I don't want to put any big secrets out there, but what is your next step? What's the future hold for you?
I'm always open. I think I just like follow a vision of how I see myself
mm-hmm.
and whatever comes and it's in my hands, I'll get it. And if not, I'll keep working. And
do you have a mentor that helps you understand and soften the learning curve of what it takes to own a business, or are you just kind of learning as you go?
I've been learning as I go, but then I ask a lot of questions to people that are successful.
Okay. How do you find yourself in those circles of being able to ask questions of successful people? Do you go to the country club and hang out there?
No, I don't do any social. But I think just customers at work.
Okay.
I have a lot of like ranchers, a lot of business owners that they go eat at Bubba's.
So. Well, you have a magnetic personality, so it's easy to open up to. And so you start talking to them. And also, you're not very, what's the word? You're not intimidating. So perhaps where maybe somebody that was a go-getter, maybe a 50-year-old individual who is trying to get in and trying to acquire more businesses and expand his empire, these ranchers may not open up to.
Mm-hmm.
But you come across as somebody that is very unassuming and that you're just friendly and genuine. Do you think that helps?
I think so, yes.
Uh-huh.
And I'm always humble. I'm always willing to learn. I'm always willing to ask the question. I mean, the worst I can get, it's a no.
Right.
I can't help you or I can do anything for you, but usually it's not the case.
That's interesting because so many of us are terrified of the no. For example, when you're dating, the most terrifying thing is going out to ask somebody out and getting turned down.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas you're going to be in the exact same position if you don't ask at all, right? It's going to be a definite no if you don't ask. But the possibility of a no is terrifying. But that's something you were able to get over. How did you get over that fear that's kind of like innate in us of being turned down?
I think I'd rather ask the question or whatever it comes. It's a 50-50. But then I'm going to know like right there and there.
Interesting.
And not leave and be like, oh, what if it was, I was going to get a good feedback or I was going to get a good answer.
Even, so what you're saying is even a no provides information that's valuable.
Yes. And then you cut ties or you cut whatever you have to let go and move on.
Okay. Was there a time where you found like this was your transition where you actually felt like you made it? Like, was it the acquisition of Bubba's and becoming an owner that you felt like I finally made it? Or was it the first rental deal that you did at the beauty salon? Was there a point in your life where you feel like I've got this? I know that I can make things work for myself. I don't have to rely on somebody else to present the opportunity. I can make my own opportunity.
I think I've known that since I was young, that I'm capable.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes I don't recognize it. It's always like, oh, like I don't, it's not that I don't appreciate what I have, but it's like I'm so like focused on being a better person, not having more, but just growing as a person with whatever I do.
Okay. So your sense of satisfaction doesn't come necessarily just from how many zeros are in your bank account, but how you're able to participate in society and contribute as a business owner.
Yes.
Let's get back to your roots a little bit. Can you tell me about your childhood, where you grew up, and just what made you you?
I grew up in the border town, San Luis.
Okay. San Luis, Arizona.
Mm-hmm. During the week, during school time, and then weekends and vacations, I used to go to San Luis, Mexico.
Okay. So that Who was like, in San Luis, Mexico that brought you back?
My nana, my grandma.
Okay.
And family.
So your parents lived here? Did you live with your mom and your dad here?
Yes.
Okay. So they lived here in San Luis, Arizona. And would they commute just during the week with you each time? They would go home for the weekend and spend the weekends in San Luis, Mexico?
That's correct, yes.
Okay. It wasn't just you going back to visit grandparents. It was your whole family
the
went
whole
back.
Family.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You have a brother.
Yes.
And so you and your brother would go back with your parents to go hang out with your grandparents in San Luis, Mexico. So what elementary school did you go to?
San Luis.
Okay.
Rio Colorado, I think it is.
Was it Rio Colorado? Okay. And then the middle school?
San Luis Middle School.
Okay. And the high school?
San Luis High School.
All right. So, I mean, you are a literal product of this southwest corner of Arizona and Yuma, San Luis. We're all, you know, kind of foothills. It all kind of is this metropolitan area. Have you ventured out and lived in another distant city other than Bakersfield where you were harvesting grapes and tried to just go off on your own to be away from your family? Or have you just set your path here and grew your roots here the entire time?
The entire time here in Yuma.
Okay. So have you felt like there's something else out there for you that's calling you that you want to go and explore, or would you rather just travel temporarily and then come back and this is home for the foreseeable future?
I think this is home for sure. Uh-huh. I love it here in Yuma, but I do want to travel.
Okay. Travel and see. Have you traveled already?
Yes.
Okay. Tell me what was a favorite destination that you went to?
I think my favorite destination was Europe.
Oh.
Yes.
Well, Europe's a big place. What part in Europe?
So I did Italy, Switzerland, and Paris, and London.
Okay. So that's an interesting mix, because you hear about Italy and Paris and London, but the Switzerland.
Mm-hmm.
Was that different? Tell me what you liked about each of those places. Italy, what was your favorite place in Italy?
I just went to Milano.
Okay.
So I did Milano, then I got a train. It was two-three-hour train to Switzerland, Geneva.
I didn't realize it was that close because I haven't done that trip. Mm-hmm. That's something that has always been outside of my comfort zone. I've wanted to. I've had the ambition to do it, but I just haven't pulled the trigger. So I'm very interested. So you went to Milano, and then you went to on a train to Switzerland,
mm-hmm.
And it was only 2 or 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Was Switzerland a lot different than Italy?
Yes.
In which ways?
In every way.
Okay.
More conservative. People are more conservative. And okay. Then Milan.
What does that mean, conservative?
Like they're just quiet, the way they dress, the way they project themselves.
Mm-hmm. So in Switzerland, are there a lot of business owners? Do they drive their individually owned cars, or do they bike a lot, or what is it about Switzerland that's different? Because I feel like Italy, people bike a lot and walk a lot, and maybe not everybody owns a car.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the same in Switzerland?
No, I think in Switzerland, people own their cars more.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And they are conservative in a way that they're not as maybe loud do they stay up late and have a lot of festivities? It seems like that's just the vibe that I see from Italy. I don't know if that's true or not. I've never been there, but what is the nightlife like in Switzerland?
I didn't do any nightlife in Switzerland.
Okay. Is it because things kind of shut down, or is it just because that wasn't your style?
It wasn't what I was looking at the time. And Italy, I did went out, and nightlife was really, really fun.
Yeah, my understanding of Italy is that it kind of like the town wakes up or the city wakes up at like 9 o'clock, and then you're going to be out until the early hours of the morning.
Yes.
But that wasn't the case in Switzerland.
No.
Mm-hmm. What did you like about Switzerland?
It was just clean. It was relaxing, calm.
Well, that's very good. Thank you, Judith.
Thank you.
For coming on our show. I think you'll be an inspiration to a lot of people that were just uncertain enough to determine whether or not they were just going to go out and do the 9-to-5 or actually be part of the engine that grows this economy, the small businesses that are the contributors. So thank you. I really appreciate you coming on the show.
Thank you.
If you have questions or want to know more about something that was discussed today, please call the law firm of Deason, Garner & Hanson at 928-783-4575 or visit YumaEstatePlanning.com.
We're the comfort experts, people you can trust. Ask our customers, that's why they count on us. Over 50 years of service, keep us going strong. We've got a name you can depend upon. Hansberger Refrigeration and Electric. Hansberger, count on.
If you're the owner and/or operator of a local business and want to continue to hear the right talk, please consider advertising on KBLU. Your advertising dollars are the gasoline for the Clark, Kilmeade, Hannity, Beck engine. Without your support, the old 560 just won't roll. Reach out to like-minded folks, the patriots listening to this legendary radio station. When you do, you can invite new customers in and remind regulars to visit more often. And most importantly, keep the programming you love on 560 KBLU.
Did you know if you're an adult living with asthma or COPD, getting sick with pertussis may result in severe complications? Pertussis, or whooping cough, is a serious respiratory illness. Vaccination is the best way to help protect against pertussis. Speak to your healthcare provider to ensure you are up to date on your Tdap vaccination. Learn more at lung.org.
The preceding show on 560 KBLU was a paid program. All opinions expressed by the program participants are solely their current opinions and do not reflect the opinions of 560 KBLU, Eldorado Broadcasters LLC, their respective parent companies or affiliates, or the companies with which the program participants are affiliated and may have been previously disseminated by them. The program participants' opinions are based upon information they consider reliable, but neither 560 KBLU, Eldorado Broadcasters LLC, nor its affiliates, nor the companies with which such participants are affiliated, warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such.
This is News Talk 560 KBLU, Yuma.